The following program is for mature audiences only. Football talk shows, most of them sound like this. Blah, 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 blah. Not this one. That's because it features the former director of college scouting with the Chicago Bears. He worked on the staff that drafted, you know, the likes of Devin Hester, Olin Krutz, Lance Briggs. He's the man who takes shit from absolutely nobody. He's Greg Gabriel. Gabriel joins longtime Chicago sports reporter David Schuster. And this is, accordingly, Gabriel Schuster Talk Bears.
And welcome into the second edition of the Gabriel Schuster Podcast. I am David Schuster, and he, of course, is the longtime NFL scout and scouting director, including for the Chicago Bears, and all-around NFL guru, Greg Gabriel. Greg, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. We made it to week two. Maybe we got a chance with this
thing. I think we do. And Greg, you know, we'll get right to it. We're 1 week away, as we record this podcast today, 1 week away from the beginning of training camp. And I was going to ask you before yesterday, will there be an NFL training camp? Will there be an NFL season? Well, we know there's going to be a training camp, I do believe. The season, we'll get into that in just a second. But I think it's a little bit more clear after what happened yesterday in some kind of agreement between the owners and the Players Association. And we'll get right to it. So apparently they've come to some kind of agreement. The two sides have agreed to the following. There will be testing for the COVID-19 in training camp, and I guess at least initially the first couple of weeks, there will be testing on a daily basis. And then after that, if the positive rate is less than 5%, I guess the testing will be more decreased after a while. Unfortunately, if it is over 5%, they'll go back to testing on a daily basis. And then it's not in stone just yet, but it sure looks like this is the way it's going to go, Greg. It doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of preseason games. And that tells me that the owners are a little nervous about some things, and they're already caving into some of the players' demands. I don't know if you look at it the same way, but they're trying to get the season going. I think that's the bottom line. Money is always the bottom line, and I think that's what's going on.
Well, yes, money obviously is involved, and a lot of this negotiation has to do, and you go back to Sunday where they had that social media thing with the players where they were bombarding social media with different things about the NFL having to do things right. It all gets down, in my opinion anyway, to the money, making sure that players get what is due to them. They don't want salaries cut. Testing and safety as far as COVID obviously plays into it, has to play into it. But at the same time, and you and I were, you know, talking the other day, and there's other sports right now that are playing. Baseball starts up this week. Basketball and hockey start up pretty soon. NASCAR's been going for about 5 or 6 weeks now without any incident. There's been two drivers that have tested positive, and one who's used to be the best driver of all, Jimmy Johnson. It was a false positive, and he was back in his car after missing just one race. But you know, people say, well, it's NASCAR, guys, you know, he's in a car by himself. Well, when you look at NASCAR closely and you come down pit row's like the sideline of a football game,
right?
If not more,
right?
You know, you got all the pit crews and a bunch of other people there in close proximity, and they have not had any type of incidents as far as outbreaks of COVID. So I think in the other sports, they've had to look at it. And I think that's a positive sign. Then you bring in the fact last Wednesday they had the All-Star race. That's the first race where they let fans in. They had about 20,000 people there. Now, as of now, so it's a week later, we haven't heard of any outbreak of COVID as a result of 20,000 fans being there. I'm sure that's to be determined, just like the recent outbreaks. Nobody can prove it, but I think a lot of the recent outbreaks have a lot to do with all the protesting going on a couple weeks ago. There were so many people together at the same places that it was bound to happen. The people were going to, you know, get infected with COVID. So we're going to see how that works out. I'm always the optimist. I think there's going to be a season. But in saying that, this is going to be – especially the preseason. It'll be, I think it'll be different once the season starts, but a preseason so far different, so far removed from anything we've had in the past. And I was talking to Aldo before you came in. How about this? There's going to be coaches and GMs judged on what happens to their team this season. And through no fault of their own, they could lose their job. And a lot of it has to do with the circumstances going into the season and not having a regular training camp, in which, you know, you're going to be guessing at your team. It's going to be made up more in mind than what they've done on the field, because they're not going to be doing that much on the field.
Well, there's going to be so much, there already is so much unprecedented things going on in all the sports. I mean, basketball's being played in a bubble in one location, and hockey's being played in a bubble in two locations in Canada, by the way. Baseball has come up with this 60-game sprint with some ridiculous rules. So everything is unprecedented, and that's going to, you know, filter into the NFL as well. No preseason games. That just blows me away. Not that I'm a fan of preseason games. To be honest with you, I used to go to all the Bears preseason games and yawn through much of them, especially you know, when you got down to the last one and there's guys who are going to be, you know, in jobs that are not even NFL related, you know, playing in that last fourth game. So I'm not going to, you know, cry any tears not seeing preseason games. But as you alluded to, it's going to be really, really strange. Now, I think the offshoot of no preseason games, I think what they're talking about is having an extended training camp. So I guess this is going to be a way for the coaches and the general managers and everybody else to take a better look at their teams with an extended training camp. But that's not a substitution for games itself.
No, if you don't have, I mean, football's a contact game. And if you don't have the contact, you're going to be guessing at who's your 53 or 55-man roster. And I think a lot of things are going to be predetermined. It's going to be very difficult for the rookies. I think the draft choices, when they drafted certain guys, they said they drafted them for a reason. They're going to be on the team. But for the undrafted guys, there's always a few that make your team every year. Mm-hmm. That could be a foregone conclusion this year. It's just not going to happen. You don't have time to evaluate. And that's what the beauty of preseason was about. It's really more for the personnel departments, the GM. Yeah, you're getting your team ready to play, but you're finding out about those young players and can they play at the pace and the speed of an NFL game? You know, how good do they know their assignments? How do they react on the field? And all that tape helps, you know, during the course of the cutdown period and when you're putting together your short lists for practice squad and to bring in guys, once guys get hurt, a lot of that comes from what you saw in preseason. You're going to have none of that this year. And that's going to make it really difficult for the pro scouting departments and for the general manager himself when you're making final decisions on, first, your cut down, and then, two, who to bring in, who not to bring in.
Now, you were telling me before we started this recording here that there might be, because of the whole COVID-19 situation, where undrafted free agents can be offered X amount of money, a decent amount of money. What'd you say, $150,000?
I don't think it's anything that's been approved yet, but it's been talked about that there could be an opt-out for, I read this the other day, for undrafted free agents. They can choose, you know what, given the circumstances of what's going on this year, COVID and everything else, you know, you can opt out of your contract and still get like a guarantee. And the dollar figure that was tossed around was something like $150,000. And at first thought, you think, well, why wouldn't you take that? Well,
but the other side of the coin,
the other side of it is, when you're a football player, you're a competitor. And your dream, whether you're an undrafted free agent or you're a first round draft choice, is to play in the National Football League. You want to play with the best of the best because you think that's what you are as an athlete and as a competitor. I would think, and this I'm saying this from my experience in the front office, that there's a player that took the 150 and ran, he'll never get another opportunity again.
Because, you know, they couldn't trust him to play.
Not a competitor. He's taking the money and run. Now, the saving grace could be if in another couple of weeks the XFL comes back and we have a buyer, and we're going to know that by the 10th of August, if not a little bit sooner. You know, some guys like that could end up in the XFL, if there is an XFL. But at the same time, from the National Football League standpoint,
never I could say again. It's like,
that's right, unless he really showed something in another league.
All right, let me ask you this question. If there's no preseason games, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff that still has to be worked out between the Players Association and the owners, and still we don't know if a season's going to happen. If there is the COVID-19 outbreak in one team or any team, you know, that might be it. Who knows? All right, that's to be seen down the road. But let me just ask you, the roster sizes is usually 53, or what is it? It's for game day, is it 53?
It's well, the roster size is 53, as I understand it, but then it goes to 55 for game day, so you can bring up two guys from your practice squad.
Right.
You got a larger practice squad, a 12-man practice squad instead of a 10-man. You can bring up two, and those players don't have to go through waivers to get them back down on the practice squad. But at the same time, you're still only dressing 46.
Do you think that might change with that this whole thing?
I think this is going to be a very fluid situation all year. And, I was listening to a thing on the NFL Network yesterday, and it made a lot of sense, that because of COVID and roster sizes, that you may have to start cross-training players. You know, you might have a guy who had experience on both sides of the ball in college. And because of the unique situation this year, you may have to train him in two positions this year. Maybe he's going to be an offensive lineman who's got some experience on defense, or vice versa. Defensive lineman who's got some experience on offense, and which brings up a situation, Rashad Coward. You know, right. He was a defensive lineman
right.
that after his rookie year on the practice squad, they moved over to offense. That's a prime example. You could get a guy that you were cross-training this year, was on your practice squad, and had him working at two different positions, and you find out that, hey, this guy is better at the other position than he was at his original position.
Right. Now, obviously, when you watch, and you've watched your share, more than your share of high school games, the guys play two ways. I mean, you know, they're off, they could be a wide receiver and a defensive back, for instance, or whatever. Can you remember a player? I mean, Deion Sanders comes to mind real quickly, obviously. He played both, you know, sides of the ball. But can you think of some other players? And can anybody in today's NFL, never mind the whole COVID thing, let's just throw that out for a second. Can you see a player playing 80% of the downs, both offensively and defensively, both sides of the ball?
Well, the name that comes to mind is Devin. Devin played multiple positions in college, receiver, defensive back, running back, plus return. And when he came to us, we drafted him as a defensive back and to be a returner. But in practice, he was also a scout team receiver, and we found out that he might be a better receiver than he is a defensive back. So he was a guy like that who really could practice two positions and could play two positions.
He could, but he didn't. He didn't do it. But can you see a player in today's NFL? I mean, it's such a collision sport. Can you see a guy actually playing 80% of downs one side of the ball and the other side? Is that even possible nowadays?
I think it's possible. I can't think of offhand who that player or players might be. You can look at the Bears again, too, and Cordarrelle Patterson, where he plays two positions, right. But it's on the same side of the ball. He plays wide receiver and he plays running back, and he did that in New England also. So it's not that he's working both sides.
I just can't see it happening. And I'm even thinking to myself, there's just too much chance for injury and, you know, not enough time recovery. I mean, you got to go out of the game periodically. And if you're playing both sides of the ball as much as I'm...
Well, it'd have to be a spot player. I mean, it's a guy that you're going to...
Not a starter,
has,
on both
has
sides.
A certain skill set. I think there are some players that...
Could do
in
it.
Certain situations, they have. They've played maybe some defensive back... Or they're a defense back and they played some receiver. Again, I just can't, having not thought about it and trying to come up with a name real quick, I can't do that. But, I think there are some players right now that do that.
All right. If there's not going to be any NFL preseason games, it's almost unfathomable for me to even ask, but how do you think this will affect the coaches? I mean, how are they going to treat training camps or you know, the preseason that isn't a preseason? How are they going to deal with this?
You know, it's the unknown. I read one thing last night where it said one of the proposals, and again, I don't think anything's etched in stone yet. And I that's going to be done during the course of this week, so that we have all the answers probably by Friday or Saturday at the latest. But the first 2 to 3 weeks is going to be strength and conditioning. Well, basically, they're going back. That's the off-season program that was missed out on back in March and April. And then you're going to get into 10 days of unpadded practices. So that's like your OTAs and mini camp. And then a couple weeks of padded practice. The only thing that I see wrong with that is it's not that it's a good idea, but at the same time, you're trying to get your team ready for the regular season. And if we look at how training camp has been run, and everything in the National Football League is done on tradition, certain ways, certain things are done. You know, you get your team ready for the first 4 weeks of training camp. You got 2 weeks going into that first game, and then you got the first two, maybe first three preseason games, and then you're backing off with your top players for that last 2 weeks, so they're fresh and healthy for the start of the season. If you go into a training camp and you have your last 2 weeks of padded practices, is that going to take something away from them when the actual bell rings at the start of the season? And that's a different scenario. I think everybody's is learning on the run this year because it's a unique situation.
It's unprecedented, of course. All right, so that leads me into a question here. Two thoughts of mind, I guess, on this one. No preseason games, extended training camp, what have you. Then the bell rings, game one, Bears play, I think, at Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. Is there more of a chance for injury or a less of a chance for injury? I mean, less of a chance only because there's no preseason game, so you're not going to get injured in those, although you could get also injured in training camp. Or is there more of a chance of injury once the bell opens or the bell, you know, the curtain comes down and all that goes up?
That's an interesting question because
you haven't done it in
you
preseason.
You build your body up.
Yeah.
Okay, and you have contact. Now, training camp now isn't anything like training camp was when I started with the Giants and the Bills. So going back to 81, 84,
hitting.
There was double sessions every day.
Nutcrackers.
Yeah, I mean, Nutcracker, great example. 1985, I'm with the Giants. Very first day of practice, they go through stretching, and as soon as stretching was over, Parcell lines them up and has them do the Nutcracker. Very first practice. And goes on for like 15 or 20 minutes. He goes, I just want to set the tone.
Yeah, that's, you know, setting
and
it.
You don't do that anymore.
No.
And back then we had 6 preseason games. And I remember, and this was 1986 season. We played 6 preseason games. And the last preseason game, I don't remember who it was against, but we're in the middle of the third quarter and all the starters are in 6 preseason games.
Oh, my God.
Now, we went on, we won the NFC and won the Super Bowl right here. But that was the way Parcells did things then.
Well, it worked.
Right.
Okay. I mean, 6 preseason games. I mean, I remember that because I was back then there also. 4 bores the hell out of me, and now they're not going to have any this year. So it is pretty radical. All right, let's skip ahead. Let's just say the season starts, you know, and everything is hunky-dory. You know, the whole COVID thing is overcome, knock on wood. Maybe, hopefully, there'll even be fans in the stands. That's yet to be determined, too. But we want to talk
about... Not New York or New Jersey.
That's right. The
governor of New Jersey said no fans. Now, I think it's really... My personal opinion, too early to make that statement. We're still in July. Season doesn't start till September. And maybe you could say, okay, September, you're not playing in front of any fans. But let's see what happens after that.
All right. Anyway, let's just say the season starts, yada, yada, yada. The Bears, I'm always optimistic. I'll be honest with you, maybe stupidly, but I'm always optimistic, with the Bears going into a season. I was last year, and I was proven wrong, unfortunately. But I do like what the Bears have done in this quote-unquote offseason going into training camp. And I want to specifically talk about the 10 veteran free agents that they signed and who is going to help them. In your mind, there's been 5 on offense. I'll run them down. Nick Foles, Ted Ginn Jr., Jimmy Graham, Jermaine Ifedi, and Jason Spriggs, I believe is how you pronounce his name. That's on offense.
You left out one.
Who did I leave out?
Demetrius Harris.
That's right, Demetrius Harris. All right, so there's six, actually. On defense, the following free agents, Robert Quinn, Bakavius Mingo, Artie Burns, Jordan Lucas, and Tayshaun Gibson. I hope I didn't miss anybody on that list.
John Jenkins they brought back.
Okay.
And then if you want to count him as a free, actually played in Canada, best corner in Canada, Trey Robertson, or Roberson.
Okay. My list was incomplete. Yours is better.
Kentrell Bryce, who, you know, he's going to be a bubble guy. He played with Green Bay, thought he was going to be re-signing with Green Bay. They didn't bring him back. That was going into the 19 season. He signs with Tampa, gets cut by Tampa at the end, but he's a, you know, more of an experienced guy. You mentioned Tayshaun Gibson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another guy. He's actually with the Bears the last couple weeks of the season, last week of the season, Devontae Boyd, linebacker. And they need some depth, having lost, Kwiatkowski in free agency.
All right, let me give you my opinion, which will pale in comparison to yours, because you're the expert and I'm sort of the novice at best here. But I'm going to tell you who I think is going to potentially help them, injury aside, of course. Foles will help them in some capacity, whether he's on the field. He will push Trubisky, unlike some of the guys who have been there in the past, because Foles has had some success at the highest level. So whether he ends up winning the job or not, I think he's going to push Trubisky to be a better football player himself. So I'm going to start with him. I actually do believe, even though Ted Ginn Jr. is getting a little up there in years, I do like his versatility, and I don't think the Bears' wide receiving core is as good as it's been maybe the last couple of years. They've lost a couple of players, and still they're counting on some of the younger players still on that roster. So I actually think Ted Ginn Jr. is going to help, hopefully, his experience. If Jimmy Graham can somehow turn the clock back, it's a big if. You know, if you can get Jimmy Graham at least a percentage of what he was in New Orleans when he was the best tight end in football, I think he could help them. I think Ifedi is going to be a starter, probably at right guard. So those are the guys who I like. On defense, obviously Robert Quinn, if he can just play up to what he's done in the past, that he's going to, I mean, he, you know what his best thing attribute's going to be besides getting to the quarterback? He's going to allow Khalil Mack to get to the quarterback, because there's going to be finally somebody on the other side like Mack who's going to help him on the other side and take some of the double teams potentially away. Those are the guys who stand out for me as veteran free agents who are signing. And tell me if I'm right or wrong about those, and who else do you see?
I don't disagree with you. I'm a little higher on Jimmy Graham than you are, and here's why. I think when they signed him and there was that $4 million price tag, you know, right away it was he worth $4 million? Oh, regardless, the guy's had a hell of a career. He's probably just on what he's done in the past, he's worth, I don't begrudge anybody the money. You know, and they had the money to give him. Is it a little bit too much? Maybe. But first of all, I mean, he's not a, quote, tight end. He is a move tight end, a flex tight end. He's a mismatch guy. Now, you go back, and I've seen the game a couple times on the NFL Network in recent weeks. I think it was Seattle and Green Bay in the playoffs. He had a hell of a game. Hell of a game. And, you know, set up the winning touchdown, had a touchdown, I think, in the game. With his size, he can still run. He might not be quite as fast as he was, but he catches the ball well. He can run after the catch. He's never been a blocker. So that part's a given right there. You're not asking him to be a blocker. And at the other tight end, you know, they brought in Demetrius Harris, who has experience in this offense, played at Kansas City when Nagy was at Kansas City. Last year he went to Cleveland as a free agent on a one-year deal, left and came here. But the guy who knows and understands the offense, and we know how Nagy has been with getting guys who – he has a relationship with, they know and understand the offense. He is a strong blocker. And then you have, you know, Cole Kmet figure that in. I think the tight end core is there's nine players, I think, or something, tight ends going into training camp right now on the roster. I think that could change. I don't know if roster limits, just to back up a little, I don't know if roster limits are really set, even though supposedly 90, that could change before right. the end of the week. I don't think next week when the Bears report, there's going to be nine tight ends on the roster. I think that could change a little bit.
What do you think, they carry four ultimately?
I think they carry four.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would guess that it's going to be Harris, Graham, Komet, and then I'm not sure if it's Braunecker because he's a good special teams player. Is it going to be J.P. Holtz because he's a good blocker? It's going to be a guy, and I would think that it could be the guy who's the better blocker. But the key to this offense is really the tight end position. When you look, and I think we talked about this last week a little bit, when you look at Philadelphia and Kansas City are also running this offense. They got tight ends that are catching.
Oh, yeah.
If they're not catching 100 balls, they're catching pretty damn close to 100 balls. And, you know, since Nagy has come here, nobody's come close. They haven't hit a third of that.
Right.
You know, so they've got to upgrade the production of that position, and that helps the wide receiver core also. Because it's all about matchups. That's what the NFL is right now. It's a game of matchups. And if you can get Jimmy Graham to catch 35 passes from that flex tight end position, he's a successful signing.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the combination of Komet got to learn the pro game and Demetrius Harris can also get solid production, they've helped the offense is a lot better than it was last year.
All right, I want to talk about one of the players I just made mention of on defense, Quinn. I mean, he's had already a very successful career at a young age. Obviously, they got him to get to the quarterback. That goes without saying. And like I said, I think he's going to immensely, especially if Akeem Hicks is healthy as well, help Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack is still the number one guy on defense. But I think Robert Quinn is going to certainly help get to the quarterback and make Mack even better. But tell me how you would envision Quinn positioning on the field to do just what I said, to make all the other guys around him better.
Well, if you look at tape of Quinn when he was with both the Rams and Dallas, he plays predominantly on the right side. And you look at when Khalil Mack is at his best, it's when he's on the left side. So I think that alone helps the edge rush situation, because you got two strong pass rushers coming from each side. Robert Quinn, he's still a young guy. He's, what, 28 years old, 29 years old. He can run. You know, he had an issue coming out. This is a guy that could very easily have been a top three, top four pick, but there were some teams that flunked him on his medical. There was a non-cancerous tumor they have. I don't remember all the specifics of it, but there was teams that had him off the board because of that. He has overcome that situation. You know, and the medical situation was such that, you know, what if? It's not that they knew he could play, but what if this becomes a horrible situation and then we get stuck with a contract? And so some teams are looking at that way. That proved out to be not a point at all. He's already had a very successful career. But this is a guy that, you know, size-wise, athleticism, he's very similar. He might even be a little bigger than Khalil Mack. He's got long arms. He can run like a deer. That's going to make the defense that much stronger as far as pressuring the quarterback. And then you've got Hicks coming back on the inside, Roy Robertson Harris. And who's that help? That helps the secondary.
Absolutely. All right. I mentioned Nick Foles, and, you know, I don't really want to go too much into the quarterback because Lord knows on all our subsequent podcasts, quarterback's going to be the first thing we talk about each and every week, especially after the games start going. But I do want to talk about a couple of the rookies. You know, the Bears didn't have a deep draft only because they didn't have a first-round pick, and they didn't have I don't think they had a couple of second-round picks, and then they didn't have another pick until what?
Fifth
round. So they really didn't have a deep draft this year. But I think both of their second-round picks are going to be, and I think you'll probably agree with this, are going to be very integral in the team's success potentially this year. We already mentioned Cole Kmet. He's going to see the field a lot, and I think he's going to learn a lot under Jimmy Graham. I mean, that's a good guy to learn from on top of everything else. And I think Jalen Johnson is ultimately, as cornerback out of Utah, I think he's going to start, you know, if he gets a chance to earn the job in this quote-unquote training camp.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was drafted to start. He's still got to go and come out of camp that he's the right player. Artie Burns is going to be in that situation. Artie Burns was first-round pick.
Okay.
Okay, and he started off his career pretty good in Pittsburgh, leveled off. The Bears got him at the right price. I don't have the contract numbers in front of me, but I think it's a one-year deal or something. And you know, it's not going to be anything that if he doesn't make it, it's going to cost him any money. But it's a guy that has had success in his career at a tough position. I just think, you know, looking at the secondary as a whole, they weren't – Chuck Pagano, I don't think, was as happy as – you might have wanted him to be with the way the secondary played last year versus the year before, because they've brought in a bunch of new players.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at Tashaun Gibson, who has been a very successful safety, got some big money last year to go to Houston, but they let him go after this year. They had to sign some other people, had to make a decision. Safety isn't always one of the most important positions, but it is in this particular scheme, and he is a ball hawk. He has been a natural interceptor his entire career. They brought in Jordan Lucas, who's been a backup safety at Kansas City his whole career, started some games, very good special teams player. So when you look at that, Kentrell Bryce was another safety they brought in. I think they're looking at the depth of the position too. And the same thing at the cornerback position. You bring in Artie Burns, you draft two guys, Johnson, and then you have the other guy that they drafted in the fifth round, Kendall Vildor from Georgia Southern. So to me, that says we need some better players. And if you look at the tape from those guys in college, it was pretty good. And then there's one name I'll throw out, and it's only because I think he's an interesting guy. They didn't play him in the preseason at all last year. They took him with a late pick, sixth or seventh round pick a year ago. Steven Denmark played at a small school in Georgia. It wasn't Georgia Southern. I think it was another. It might have been Georgia Southern. But he's a size speed guy. And I remember mentioning I was on the score right before the draft. He's a guy that wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being a safety after being on the practice squad all last year. I think they were trying to hide him on the practice squad. That's why they didn't play him in the preseason, just to develop him. But when you look at his ball skills, his size, and his overall athleticism, he could be a guy that could be worth watching in training camp. Now, in saying that, who's going to be able to watch training camp? I don't think any of us are going to be allowed in to watch training camp.
That's going to be interesting.
Which is going to be, I think, when we get a month from now, 6 weeks from now, we're getting ready to start the regular season. They're cutting down the squad. There's going to be people second guessing. You know, what are they second guessing on? Nobody's going to have seen any camp.
All right. There's one player that 2 years ago I thought, oh my God, this guy is going to be so good. And I still think he is, and he's young. But he tailed off last year, not so much because of his own capabilities, but I just think the fact that the defensive line, specifically Akeem Hicks, so a lot of the guys in the secondary were sort of, you know, that always happens. You know, if the line isn't that good, the defensive secondary isn't as good. It sort of goes hand in hand. But I want to see Eddie Jackson get back to what he did 2 years ago. As a rookie, he was fantastic. Again, no fault of his own, I don't think, last year. But that's one player that I'd like to see get back. He's, talk about a ball hawk. He was an incredible ball hawk in his rookie year, and that's one player, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, that I'd like to see return to what he did 2 years ago.
Oh, I agree with you. He didn't have the interception production last year that he had, so if you're comparing that, you say, okay,
he had
a down
year. I guess
but
I am.
I don't think he played poorly. He just didn't have the takeaways that he had from the year before. I think that's one of the reasons why they made a switch at the other safety and they brought in Gibson. It's another ball hawk. They want to have the right fit back there. And I think now they feel that it's a little bit stronger with Gibson back there teamed with Eddie. And it's really two free safeties playing the position.
Did
right
Clinton
now.
Dix, you know, I mean, listen, he was only going to be here for 1 year because he was looking for too much money. But did he perform up to capabilities last year?
I think he played good. He didn't play great. He wasn't a trendsetter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, he for a guy that went as high as he went, I don't think he was a first round pick when Green Bay took him, and then Green Bay, after a few years, they ship him off to Washington, and then he's a free agent. He comes here, gets a 1 year deal. Now he's got, I think, a multi year deal at his new place. But I don't think he still hit the home run contract wise that he wants. He's a good player to me. He's more of a compliment to the star player. And Jackson is the star player, but what he isn't is he's not a real physical guy. And you got to have somebody that's a little bit of a tone setter back there. And Jackson's not the most physical guy in the world either. And I think that's going to be the difference with Gibson. He's a little bit more of a hitter.
Okay. We always talk about bubble players, but that's usually after the third preseason game. There's not going to be any preseason games this year. So you're already talking about bubble players even before training camp starts. I mean, you know, of guys who have been on the team even for the last year or two, who's in jeopardy?
Well, I put a list together last night getting ready for this. And on offense, I put – now, this name might be a surprise for you. I put Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, he's getting paid pretty good money. Obviously, he's a great athlete. But was his production – what you wanted?
Not last year, it wasn't.
Okay, he played some running back, played some wide receiver. He had some decent returns. But given the skill set, is he giving you back what you expected in big plays? I didn't see it. Personally, I think he could be one of those guys that is a, quote, bubble player. But again, there's no preseason for him to prove it, so he's got to do it in practice.
Do you think Ted Ginn Jr. being on the roster, that you know, makes him a bubble kind of player?
Well, could I mean, different kinds of players.
Definitely.
Ginn can't play. You know, Ginn is...
They're both return guys, though.
True, but Ginn can get deep. They both can get deep, but Ginn can still run.
Okay.
And I think he's going to be a role player. I remember I saw some people say right after the Bears acquired him or signed him to a free agent contract, they thought he was going to be a starter. I don't see him as a starter. I see him as really more of a fourth receiver than a third receiver, but a guy who can stretch the field. And when you got him in the game, you got to look out. The same role he played in New Orleans, except he might get a few more touches than he had in New Orleans. But other names I had on the bubble on offense, Adam Shaheen, obviously. He hadn't done anything since being a second-round pick.
I think he's gone.
And especially when you look at the acquisitions that they've had at tight end. I have another tight end on there, J.P. Holtz. Now, J.P. Holtz played good after he was acquired by the team in midseason last year. And I got Broniker. So really three tight ends, Broniker, mm-hmm. Shaheen, Holtz. All of them were on the team last year. None of them might be on the team this year when we get around to week one in September. And the last name I have on offense is Rashad Coward. They drafted a couple guys late. They brought in Afidi. Coward can play two positions, but you got a new offensive line coach, the guy who wanted to put him on the offensive line, Harry Hiestand. Harry isn't here anymore. So does he have somebody on the coaching staff that's really going to be, you know, jumping on the table for him? So I think that that'll be some interesting battles in training camp.
Is Riley Ridley, is he a bubble player? I mean, he didn't do much in his rookie season, although they don't really, and I'm taking a look at the depth chart here for wide receivers. They really don't have that much. That's why I have Ted Ginn Jr. actually making an impact, hopefully, for the Bears at that position and maybe as a returner as well.
Well, I think you're going to, if the tight end position is improved on the field, as much as it looks like it has been,
takes pressure off the wide receivers.
Well, it takes pressure, but you're also going to see different formations. You're going to see a lot of two and two. Two tight ends, two wide receivers.
Okay.
Okay, and so I think it's going to change your offensive sets and how guys are used. If, in fact, Graham plays good, Komet plays good, Demetrius Harris plays good, that's going to change just the way we're going to see the offense being used. You're still going to see situations where you have three wide receivers, but I think it's going to be fewer than we've seen in the past. I'm not really that worried about Riley Ridley. A lot of times it takes receivers a couple years to get going because of what they did in college, mm-hmm. you know, and they have to learn the intricacies of an NFL offense, the route trees. They're not doing those same things in college. He's a talented guy. His brother's very talented. Not a speedster. He's more of a, you know, your possession type guy. His brother can run. This guy's, you know, at least a tenth of a second slower than his brother. But he's a quality receiver. You go back at the Georgia tape, you look at it. The guy was a good player, but he still had to learn the pro game. It's like Anthony Miller we were talking about last week. You know, it takes some time to learn to play that position. Sometimes we used to think that it was going into your third year that the light was really going to turn on at that position. Now, how it's changed a little bit in recent years is that when rookies used to come in at that position, you know, the coaches would have them learn all three positions.
Right.
So you'd learn the X, the Z, and the slot position. And now to get them on the field and get them playing at full speed a little better, they're having them learn just one position at a time. And because of that, that has teams keeping 6 and 7 receivers on the roster.
I still like, you know, the ceiling is, you know, way up there for Anthony Miller. As long as he stays healthy, that shoulder has got to be healthy. Now, talking about talented wide receivers, you start with Allen Robinson. The numbers blow me away. I had to do some research. He's right now getting paid $10.9 million. You know, there's talk of a contract extension, although with this whole COVID thing, I don't know if there's any contract talks that are going on. You know, they could throw the franchise tag on him as well. But he's 26 years old, Greg, and last year, 98 catches, 1,147 yards, only 7 touchdowns, but the Bears were terrible in the red zone anyway. But here's the number that stands out like a sore thumb to me. Do you realize that Allen Robinson accounted for 32% of the Bears' passing yardage last year? Now, that's really good for him. It also doesn't speak very well for the rest of the receivers. Do you see them, you know, reaching out and giving him a contract extension? Is he going to get hit with the franchise tag? You know, or is everything just on hold because of the whole COVID situation?
I don't know if everything's on hold, but I think you got to look at the cap situation too, and it's going to be something that the front office as a whole has to look at very closely. Right now they're sitting at, I think, just under $11 million in cap space. And, you know, with that, can you use some of that to give him an extension? Yes. But you got some big money makers on this team, and you, I guarantee you, if they have to do an extension or they want to do an extension sometime during the year, they're going to have to go to people like Khalil Mack and restructure those contracts. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not taking money away. They're just
delaying it.
They turn salary into bonus. Okay. And when you turn salary into bonus, I don't know. I don't have his figures right in front of me. But let's just say his salary this year is $25 million. You take 12 of that 25 and you give it to him today, and now that 12 becomes a bonus, mm-hmm, and gets appropriated over the course of the contract instead of counting, and that takes that $12 million cap hit from this year away, and on paper you have more cap dollars even though you're spending the same amount of money. It's just how you're going to pay the guy, and you only can do that with guys that you know are going to be here. You know, so there could be some players, Keem Hicks could be another, where you could turn some of their salary money into bonus money in order to acquire cap space, in order to do an extension for a guy like Robinson. Now, here's the other part of the equation, and we haven't brought this up. What if Mitch plays good? He's coming out of contract. You got to take care of him too. Now, it's a question mark.
Yeah.
But at the same thing, even if he doesn't play good and Foles plays great, and he turns out to be the guy, you got to take care of Foles. It's the most important position on the team.
In sports.
And you're going to have to take care of that position next year, whether it's Mitch Trubisky or Nick Foles.
Listen, isn't there at least a chance that, I mean, you're going to have, probably one of them is going to be on the roster the following season, but isn't there a chance that they might, if let's just say Trubisky doesn't do it again this season, and Foles is still a backup. I mean, you know.
Won a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, he did. But the rest of his career, he's been sort of journeyman.
Right.
I think that's fair to say. No question.
He plays his best coming off the bench.
Absolutely. And that's why I think Trubisky will start. That all being said, let's just say Trubisky isn't very good and Foles comes in and for whatever reason he's not that good. Then they're actually looking at drafting a quarterback next season very high. And the whole draft next year is going to be weird because there might not be a college season here also. And then I don't know. I think they're waiting just to see what goes on with Trubisky before they allocate money to anybody else. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. And that's why, and that goes back to the Allen Robinson question.
Okay.
Do you take care of them now or do you wait? Now, you're gambling a little bit if you wait.
Right.
Because if it gets into to February and you don't have a deal done, okay, but at the same time, Mitch is coming out. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option, which I think was
the right thing.
Didn't do with Fuller. It was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a situation. There's two guys on offense, two key players on offense. And I'm not saying Mitch is a key player, but two key positions on offense that you're going to have to take care of next year. And it's going to be, you got to come up with the right answers and you got to adjust the cap the right way so you can take care of them.
Yeah. All right. I want to change gears entirely. Aldo told me to rile you up a little bit, so I'm going to rile you up.
Okay.
You know, there's so many quote-unquote experts in pro football, you know, and some of them are just fabrications of whatever. Who are the guys that you, I already know one who's not, and I don't even want to say his name. I'll let you say it. Who are guys that you know when a story comes out on the wire, and you go, yeah, you know, once again, he has, you know, hit a home run because he's got all these contacts. And who's conversely, oh, my God, he's so full of blank again. And he's just throwing.
We can say shit on the show.
Yeah, you actually can. What's wrong with me? I swear all the time. He's full of shit. So who are those quote-unquote experts? Because, you know, I on Twitter, I only have certain people. You're one of them, by the way, that I follow. Because I have faith in some people and I have no faith in others. So I'm sort of telling you in advance who I you know, follow and who I think is good and who's not. But who are the people in the NFL, the quote-unquote experts, reporters, that you either have faith in or are full of shit?
Well, I'm going to say reporter because there's information guys and then there's reporters.
Okay, that's true.
Okay. And the guy right at the top for me, and I've known him for years when I was working for the Giants, this guy was the Giant beat writer, Peter King.
Peter's great.
And Peter is a good friend. We talk a lot, especially when it gets near draft time. Got a ton of respect for Peter. He has got as good, if not the best, connections in the league as far as getting great information. He's one of the very few people that can get into a draft room every single year. And he gets in there and, you know, he tells a story after the fact. But, like, he was in when the Bears drafted Trubisky. He was in the San Francisco draft room. And he'll tell you what went on.
Yeah, I'm sure he can.
But that deal, and in reality, that deal was done days before
the
draft.
Yeah, you said that last, correct.
Adam Schefter. Information, Ian Rapoport has gotten better. I think a few years ago, people questioned Rapoport because he had a close connection with a certain agent and they thought he was getting a lot of the information with that agent. I don't want to mention the agent's name, but I think...
Did that agent represent a lot of Bears players? Because he came up with a lot of Bears news.
I don't think he does right now.
Okay.
Okay. I have not heard his name with a Bears player. Not could be. I just haven't heard it in a while. But I think he does a great – most of the guys at the NFL Network, I think, do a great job. I think the draft guy, Daniel Jeremiah, who I've been on the road with a number of times over the years, does a great job. But those are by far the best.
How about the other side of the coin?
The worst?
Yeah.
The worst.
You can say
scoop
it.
Guy?
Yeah.
Jason Lockenfora. The other guy, Florio, is a gossip guy. Florio throws, from Pro Football Talk, he throws a dart at the wall, hopes the dart will stick. And, you know, 50, 60, 70% of the time, it's just fictitious stuff. Go back to the, I can't think of the guy's name now. Oh, Josh McDaniels at the thing with the Colts. You know, he came up with this thing after the Super Bowl that, you know, McDaniels was wavering. The only person who said that was him, and he made it up. I mean, Chris King's one of my best friends Chris Ballard's one of my best friends in the world. And when you talk to the agent, too, nobody had any idea until the day it went down that Josh McDaniels wasn't going to Indianapolis as the head coach. And probably in the long run, was the best decision for the Colts. I think Frank Reich's going to end up being the better head coach anyway.
How about your buddy Mike Florio?
Well, that's what I said. He's the guy
who had it wrong.
I think he throws darts at the wall, hope something sticks. A lot of the times it just isn't true information. He's just throwing stuff out there, I think, to get reaction. In fact, it was funny because there was something he wrote about the other day. He said he wants to do away with the comments section in his website. Well, because if you look at the comments, most of them are negative. And a lot of his stuff is just fictitious stuff. He has some good stuff every once in a while, and you got to give him credit. This guy was a lawyer in West Virginia who was doing this as a hobby and turned it. He's probably making a lot more money working after he sold his site to NBC, making a lot more money working for NBC than he ever would have as an attorney. I think he was a labor attorney.
Let me ask you, Mel Kiper Jr., he always does the stuff, obviously, in advance of the NFL draft, you know, and I'm a layman when it comes to this. I read him, and I guess he does a good job. Does he do a good job?
Mel's a friend. I've known Mel since 83, 84. I met him through Ernie Accorsi. I was working, it was 83, because I was working part-time for Buffalo at the time. And back then, Buffalo used to always scrimmage Cleveland at Edinburgh University, which was midway between Buffalo and Cleveland, after the first week of training camp. It was like a rookie scrimmage. And Ernie was the GM of Cleveland at the time, but was still, he had not been in Cleveland a long time at that point. His family was still in Baltimore, so he'd go back and forth through Cleveland and Baltimore. Mel's from Baltimore. They were friends. Ernie brought Mel to that scrimmage, and we met, and, you know, we've been friends ever since. Mel is not – he's an information gatherer. He's not a scout, but he has better contacts. The only guy who might have better contacts is Daniel Jeremiah, because Daniel Jeremiah – was a scout in the league for at least a dozen years. And, you know, was on the road with all these guys, was very close with a bunch of GMs. So I think they're the two best. Mayock, I thought, did a great job. Mm-hmm. And Mayock, you know, he played in the league and he had good connections. But all the rest in that area, I think, you know, they're guessing.
Well, speaking of connections, you obviously have a ton of connections. You've made mention of at least a half a dozen guys that I would love to have maybe somewhere down the road on these podcasts, you know, even before the season or certainly once the season starts. And Kiper would be one of them. I actually am fascinated by him. And, you know, when he's on the air, I don't know if, you know, I'm just a layman, but when I hear him talk, I feel like I'm learning something, and that's really what
he talks real fast. You got to get him to slow down sometimes. It'd be interesting. I'd love to get Mel on, contractually speaking,
because
he's tied. Yeah, if he's tied.
Only if he could.
Because of his contract with ESPN, he might not be able to do something like that. I've been a guest when he was doing radio on the weekends. I've been a guest on his show.
Okay.
So he owes me a few.
All right, so maybe that might happen. Again, you have a lot of contacts. We've made mention of some of the players that you were, you know, integral in helping the Bears draft. So maybe we might get some of those players on. I want to end this podcast, though, because, you know, you obviously were there during Lovie's tenure with the Bears, okay? I got to ask you about Lovie, you know, because as a reporter, I didn't know him at all, to be honest with you. Lovie was very, how do I put this, close to the vest. I mean, if he wanted to keep a secret, Lovie Smith would be the guy to, you know, keep a secret. The players loved the guy, pun intended. They loved him. I can't say the reporters loved him, to be perfectly honest with you, because he did keep us at a distance. But I really wanted to know who is Lovie Smith away from, you know, the masses with the media and everything else. What was he like? I mean, again, what I was really enamored with him is that the players just love the guy. So what was he like?
You know, I think when you hear the term players coach, that's the guy.
Yeah.
You know, his picture would show up in the dictionary. Very, very likable. At the same time, if you're a player, don't cross him. Mm. You know, he'll give you chances. And perfect example, Sed Benson. Sed Benson was Lovie's guy. We drafted Sed because Lovie wanted him. There was the Texas connection, and he just thought he was going to be a great pro.
Should have been.
But he came in, and when you look at his career,
he still had some good seasons.
He had close to 7,000 total yards rushing.
Okay.
Three running backs went in the top five that year. He was number two of the three running backs that went, two from Baylor, Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams, and said went in between. And I think because of how that turned out, that was really the moment that set the impetus of taking running backs high. You take one every once in a while now, but nothing's happened like that ever since that draft. Three going in the top five. It's just the value of the position. The game has changed so much. But, you know, Sed came in. Jones was here as the running back. He was an established running back. The players loved him.
Yeah, he was another guy that players loved, yeah.
I think that from the player standpoint, the players didn't like the pick. It had nothing to do with Sed. It had everything to do with Jones because the players liked Jones so much. And so then Sed holds out, and that just made the whole situation worse. He came in on the wrong foot, and then there were situations personality-wise, Sed wasn't always – I always got along with him great, but I think there's people that just didn't get along with him that well. And I don't think the vets, the core group of vets, ever took a big liking to the guy. And it just, you know, created problems where I don't think he gave a shit as time went on. Then when he got cut, he had – it was during, I think, the Bears convention – or fan, what they used to call that thing, the fan convention or something like that. It used to be downtown. Anyway, he was supposed to be there to sign autographs. Told Lovie he was going to be there.
Mm.
And
then blew it off?
He hopped on a flight and went to Austin for the weekend. And he was gone a couple days later.
Right. So in other words, Lovie will give you a lot of rope. But
don't hang yourself.
Okay. What else can you tell us? Because, you know, Lovie to me was sort of a mystery. Although I did see him one time. It was pretty interesting. One time he was really upset with a reporter. To his credit, he didn't do it in front of the whole room, but he called this reporter in. I'm not going to mention his name. And he lambasted this reporter behind closed doors, which I thought, to be honest with you, for the reason they did, I thought it was unfair. But What else was about him? I mean, to me, he was sort of a mystery because he would not really reveal not only stuff that I think is pretty, you know, mundane, at least I do, but a lot of people in football think it's like top secret, but he wouldn't really reveal himself that much either. What was he like? What is he like?
I thought Lovie was very personable, easy to go talk to. You know, there's... When I was with the Giants, like, you know, Parcells had an intimidating factor about him a little bit. But Lovie wasn't that way.
No.
You could, you know, knock on the door, walk into his office whenever you want.
Okay.
He was always working out in the weight room. He'd be down there, you know, 6:30 in the morning. Lovie's one of the first guys in and getting a morning workout. Very easy to talk to. Leading up to the draft, we used to make these things we call profile tapes. And what it was instead of having to watch, say, eight games of a certain player beginning to end, when we were watching the tapes ourselves, we tagged the plays, and then the video department could put those plays on what we called a profile tape. And you might have, you know, depending on the position, 25, 28, 30 plays. Offensive lineman or defensive lineman, they're involved all the time. You could have a lot of plays. A defensive back, you know, a lot of times he's not even involved in a play. So, but anyway, we put these profile tapes together, and Lovie, Jerry, myself, the position coach, the coordinator, we'd watch these tapes. You know, a certain tape on a player might be 20 to 25 minutes long. You got a hell of a lot of plays when you got a tape that long. And we'd watch these things back to back to back to back to back. And you could separate the players and we'd talk about them. And the one thing I liked about Lovie was he wasn't so, say, strong with his opinion that you couldn't change it by sitting down watching tape with them and say, Lovey, this is what I see. Look at this. And there was, you know, guys, we just come to my office and we could sit down and watch tape you know, you could point out things and he'd listen to you. So, you know, there's some people that are
bullheaded.
Yeah, bullheaded. And they go, no, I'm right. You're wrong. That's all there is to it. No, I think Lovey was very, very easy to work with.
Okay. So Lovey, after his Bears tenure, coached a couple seasons down in Tampa Bay, didn't really have much success down there. And then now,
I don't think he had a chance to have success down there.
That's true.
There was a mutiny that went on there between a coach and a GM, and a GM that Lovey brought in and gave the opportunity to. And I did, that whole thing just doesn't sit with me. Whether it was right or wrong and Lovey wasn't doing a good job or not, the situation stunk.
Didn't get the proper chance. I'm sure he'd like to be in Tampa Bay right now with a number 12, you know, at the quarterback position. That's a whole nother story. Anyway, then he ultimately ended up in Champaign. Not too much success right off the bat. A little bit of success this past season. Do you think he's, you know him better than I do, obviously. Do you think he's happy at the collegiate level? Does he want to get ultimately back into the NFL?
I think this is his last job.
Okay.
Okay. And that, however long that lasts, that'll be it. I mean, you know, he's had a number of different head coaching jobs, made a lot of money. Put it this way, if he wants to work, he'll be able to work. He won't have to work.
Right. No, he's being paid fairly handsomely in Champaign.
You know, when you look, he started out, he's been a head coach since 2004. It's 2020 now. So he's been a head coach for a long time, made a lot of money, and so I think that he's set in that he's only going to be working if he wants to. Illinois is a tough place to be a coach at. When you look at I think it's as compared to some of the other places in the Big Ten, and people around here might not want to hear, but I think it's a tough place to recruit to. Champaign, as compared to some of the other schools. Now, they should be able to. I know I talked to Lovey right after he went down to Champaign, and you know, his feeling was he should be able to lock up the state of Illinois with the top recruits. But, you know, now it's, what, 5 years later, 4 years later, he still hasn't been able to do it. Doing a lot better than he did when he first got here. But I think just, you know, he was in a tough situation there. They didn't have a very good roster when he got there.
Right.
His recruiting has gotten better. But he's got a long way to go to hit Michigan and Ohio State, especially Ohio State. But I think he should be able to be on par with the Iowas and that of the world. It's getting there, and I hope, because I like Lovey a lot, that it happens.
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll even get a shot at Lovey to be on this podcast.
That'd be nice.
Somewhere down the road. I'm counting on your connections to make this even better than it already is. Hey, Greg, good talking to you today. Next week, on top of, you know, having the first week of training camp, we'll get a chance to talk about that, and that'll be interesting. We're also going to, next week, we'll run down the NFC North. You know, obviously the Vikings, the Packers, and the Lions, and we'll give the pluses and minuses of those teams. And I just really hope and pray that there's an NFL season, because I think it's going to be a good one here in Chicago.
Well, I hope so. And I'll say one thing about the NFC North. I keep hearing people trying to tell me that Matt Stafford's a good quarterback, and I think he's awful.
But okay.
The great numbers.
That'll be the headline of this podcast right there.
No question he puts up great numbers.
Oh, he's had great numbers.
When does he win?
Well, he hasn't.
He's never won.
No,
he didn't win in college. He didn't win. He had the
you know where he won? His wife is a sweetheart.
Yes.
Yeah. There. That's where he won.
He was, and I had this, we talked about him when he was coming out. He had the Cadillac of players around him when he was at Georgia. He couldn't win an SEC championship. And he was by far the most talented player. He hasn't won since he's been in Detroit.
He hasn't, of course. I don't think he's the only reason for that. But, I mean, he's over 40,000 yards in his career, 250 touchdowns.
Numbers are great.
Yeah, and
the W column isn't very good.
No, and it's interesting because, I did a little bit. You know, they've improved. We'll talk about this more next week. But the Lions have certainly improved their offensive line. That was their bane last season. And they also have a couple of good running backs also. So I think even though, you know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, I think the Lions the last couple of years have been passing. Yeah, I am teasing. They've been passing oriented. I think their philosophy and offense is going to change and take the pressure off Stafford. But your point is well taken. He hasn't won anything anywhere. But he's been paid handsomely as well.
Absolutely.
He's a winner there, too.
He got the last big contract. Or is it the second last guy? There was one. No, the last big contract from that they changed the rookie pay scale.
Wasn't it Bradford?
Yes, Bradford. It was Stafford and then Bradford, and then they changed the rookie wage scale, and those guys don't get that money
anymore. Well, you and I are paid handsomely also, aren't we?
Oh, Aldo gives us a ton. I got a Pepsi here. What do you got?
Yeah, mine's empty. Hey, Greg, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks.